Tappers, let's get it. It is the Wednesday edition of the Daily Tap for September 23rd. Like that dramatic pause, I know you did. Hope you're doing well today. We got a good show. We're going to talk about Devin Williams, Josh Hader, and why a Brewers playoff run is more possible than you may think. I think that's a little bit of a greeny tease. I don't know if it's as good as greeny would do it, but it's a nice greeny tease. Set the table there. We'll also talk about the Williams-Hader dynamic for the offseason because I am fascinated by it. I think there are a couple different directions the Brewers could go. We'll see where they net out there and just talk about those options. Also on the show today, we're going to talk about the Packer defense against the Saints offense. Obviously, the Saints offense is a little different than the first two they've faced. And then finally, we will do kind of a COVID buffet, shall we say. We have the whole mask fines that are going on in the NFL. Notre Dame, I guess, is a big deal here locally, as I saw a local radio station talk about it. I don't think it is. But Notre Dame canceled a football game because of COVID. We also have the mask mandate here in the state of Wisconsin extended for 60 days, and bars are being blamed. So we'll get into that. I think those are all interesting topics. I obviously saved COVID for last because I know there are some of you that just want sports, which I get. And I actually try to stick to sports because that's what you want. You don't want someone who's not sticking to sports and pontificating on all sorts of fucking things. So that's my duty to you, and that's what I try to bring you every day. And let's get into those sports topics with the Milwaukee Brewers. So the Milwaukee Brewers got it done yesterday. They win 3-2 against the Cincinnati Reds. The Brewers were down early after a Nick Castellanos home run. And then the Brewers battled back. Eric Sogard, who I honestly wondered why was in the lineup when I looked at the score as I was working out in the early part of this game. And then Sogard, you know, got a double early on, and then he hit the clutch double to score in the winning run. Tyrone Taylor also had a home run. Tyrone Taylor still starting to show something. I feel like Tyrone Taylor has done more offensively than Avisail Garcia. That seems to be an issue. Jacob Nottingham behind the plate, again, works well for Brett Anderson. I don't know why Omar Narvaez is catching anymore. I think that you obviously can't have Nottingham out every day. He's not a Jason Kendall per se. But I do think that there is a point to be made that Narvaez has, I think, is worn out as welcome already for the Brewers. I don't see it with him at all. I mentioned that a little bit yesterday. But yeah, Nottingham, you know, called a great game. And part of that great game call was Devin Williams and Josh Hader. Devin Williams strikes out seven batters he faced on Tuesday night. He had one walk and he worked around that walk, and the rest of the way was smooth sailing. Williams, in the second inning, he pitched. And he kind of worked in that first inning. Cincinnati did not really go down without a fight. He comes in that second inning and he strikes out Joey Votto, Eugenio Suarez, and Mike Moustakas, and he makes them all look fucking silly. The dude is electric. It is very similar to watching a young Josh Hader. It has that same vibe where you're just so excited to watch him pitch, and yet he has a pitch, unlike Hader, that is unhittable with the changeup. That changeup has been hit once. It was hit by Colton Wong on an infield single. Other than that, it has not been hit the entire year. I think batters are batting .043 against it. It's incredible what he can do with the changeup. And why that's almost better than what Josh Hader brings is because Hader was really about his fastball and a little bit on his slider. Now, he's been trying to work in a changeup, actually, recently, but with Hader's fastball, you know, guys can hit fastballs all the time. So even though Josh Hader had some real movement and could have some real lift on his fastball, if Josh Hader didn't place that fastball right, you know, the ball would leave the yard. We saw that so much last season where Hader would try to sneak in a fastball early and guys were waiting on it. And it took him a while, whether it was the catcher, whether it was pitching coach, whatever, to understand that they were sitting dead red fastball first pitch. And so Hader had to kind of shake it up. I also thought that Yasmani Grandal did not want Josh Hader to throw sliders because Yasmani Grandal, for as good as he is offensively, he was a bad defensive catcher, and I didn't think he wanted a lot of balls in the dirt. That is a conspiracy theory of my own that I have not investigated if it's in fact true, but it seemed like Josh Hader threw more fastballs last year than he did in years past. But I mean, maybe that's just me as a fan watching, you know, not necessarily actually getting into the numbers, but that's just on my radar. But Hader and Devin Williams are a dynamic combination, and they are the kind of combination that could lead you to postseason glory. We've seen this before. We've seen good bullpens be the reason that teams A, get to the World Series, and B, win the World Series. Kansas City Royals are the shining example of that in 2015, when the Royals really rode their bullpen all the way to a World Series pennant. And their basically philosophy was, get five innings out of our starting pitching, and then you have bullpen guys for the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th. And with the ability that Williams has to pitch two innings, same with Hader, the Brewers could essentially do something along the lines of, you know, Brett Anderson and Brandon Woodruff, whatever, pitching five innings, and then Devin Williams coming in for the 6th and the 7th, and Josh Hader coming in for the 8th and the 9th. That's kind of crazy to think about. And when you think about those two guys together, that's dynamic. That's electric. That's unstoppable. How does a team handle that in the playoffs? And that is a huge X factor. And I feel like the Brewers are just lurking. And I don't think they're a team that people want to see in the postseason. Sure, their offense is not great. But I will say they have gotten lifts from guys like Dan Vogelbach, a.k.a. our guy Danny Doublecheese. Jed Jerko has been a boom in the sea of busts for David Stearns this offseason, although Brad Anderson also, I think, could be considered a boom if you look. I think we do have to do a review of David Stearns' boom busts at the end of the season to see what worked and what didn't and how can it improve. Because I think there are cases in the positive and then the negative, like Narvaez and Justin Smoke, although I don't know if Narvaez really fits that category. But the Brewers' pitching staff is lethal for a postseason because it's not necessarily it's not the same game. It's just a little bit different, right? It's not like the NBA where it's entirely different, where the NBA playoffs are so different than the regular season that it doesn't even look like the same game. Baseball, I guess, has a little bit of that with just the quick pulls, and they're able to say, all right, if Brandon Woodruff doesn't have it through two innings, even though he's given up only one run or he's given up two runs, we're bringing in Brent Suter so he doesn't blow up on us. So I guess that part is different. But in most cases, the baseball is the same. It feels similar. Just there's a little bit more asked out of the bullpen and sometimes a little more asked out of your starters. If your starters can go seven or eight innings, they're like, yeah, go ahead. And we'll have either a Williams or a Hader waiting for you. And I just think in a three-game series, if they're playing the Dodgers, if they're playing the Cubs, if they're playing the Braves, I don't know if you want to see that Brewers team, because you look at that roster and you look at the ability to pitch through three and you're saying, all right, here's our – and really their postseason rotation is Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, Brett Anderson. Those are your three guys. And the Brewers have nailed down those three. And if Adrian Hauser can find something, he's really struggling. He's pitching tonight. He really needs to dig. Well, Josh Lindblom. I guess Josh Lindblom would be your fourth guy if you do advance. Josh Lindblom has been pitching well. Hauser probably goes to the bullpen. And we saw how good Hauser was in the bullpen in 2018 and a little bit in 2019 before he got promoted to the rotation. I think Hauser could be a real asset again in the bullpen if the Brewers do in fact make the postseason. Hauser is exactly the type of guy that you could have bridge the gap and hope your team comes back if your starting pitcher doesn't have it in that game. But yes, the Brewers are a legit threat in the playoffs. They are currently there. They are the 8th seed. The Dodgers, to me, this is a classic team the Dodgers do not want to see. The Dodgers would prefer if the Phillies or Giants got it. The Phillies are an absolute dumpster fire in their bullpen. David Phelps, who the Brewers traded to the Phillies, has been terrible. He struggled yesterday. Brandon Workman, who the Red Sox traded there. The Phillies have tried to fix their bullpen, and there is like a, they're walking on cursed ground or something, because they've been just awful out of the bullpen. They lose a doubleheader. They get walked off yesterday in the, I believe, eighth inning. It was, you know, obviously a seven-inning doubleheader. They get walked off in the eighth, and now they are one game back of the Brewers, or a half game back of the Brewers. The Giants did win, but they are underneath the Brewers as well as the Cincinnati Reds. The Brewers are one back of the St. Louis Cardinals, but where things could get really interesting is the Brewers could vault their way up to the sixth seed with this weekend playing the Cardinals five times. You're going to basically decide your post. This, it's basically a playoff series. I shouldn't even say it's basically. It is a playoff series. This is a playoff series between the St. Louis Cardinals and Brewers, and may the best team win. And the Cardinals or Brewers could miss the playoffs because of it. And it's the Brewers' first trip to St. Louis. They've been better there than they were in years past, and they've been okay against the Cardinals this year. It is not the same scary vibes that you have when you're playing the Cardinals. Teams do not want to play the Brewers. Let's just put it that way. Teams do not want to see the Brewers in the postseason, because Craig Counsell's been there before. Craig Counsell can push all the right buttons. We saw it with Sogar, Taylor, the calls that he's made in that lineup. Jace Peterson, even though didn't really do much yesterday, Jace Peterson being in the lineup the day prior and hitting a home run and being the offense for the Brewers on Monday night is another example of it. The Brewers have won 5 of 6. They have yet to get over 500 for the entire year. Is tonight the night? I'll be very interested to see if Adrian Hauser gets a long leash or not. If Adrian Hauser is on a, hey, if you start fucking up, we're bringing in Brent Suter, we're bringing in Freddie Peralta. Both those guys should be ready to go after a couple days off. So I wouldn't be surprised if the hook is very quick for Adrian Hauser tonight, if he shows any sign of struggling. Big moment for Trevor Bauer. Trevor Bauer has been great all year. We know how Trevor Bauer has sort of built his brand, I think, even more as a pitcher. I've started to talk myself into Trevor Bauer as a Milwaukee Brewer next year. That's another story for another time. He's up for the Cy Young. There are a lot of eyes that will be on him tonight. I could see it going in two ways. I could see Bauer being just awesome and shoving it into the Brewers, or I could see him, the moment getting to him, and that butthole tightening up and Bauer really struggling. So I think that, I know that that's the ultimate boom bust, but seriously, that's how I kind of see tonight shaping out. If we didn't, should I bet on my baseball team? I would not bet on your baseball team tonight. I think this is a stay away. Moving to the Green Bay Packers. So the Green Bay Packers are facing the New Orleans Saints. You guys know that. The Packers defense will be up against their biggest challenge of the year against Drew Brees and this Saints offense. Now, there is probably no Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas has been trying to work back quickly off this high ankle sprain, which, if I'm the Saints, I'm like, dude, can you chill? Like, I know you don't want to miss games, but you do understand, like, this is a 16-game season. We have probably the playoffs if we're good enough. Like, we can survive without you for, like, 3 weeks. Like, you, no need to re-injure yourself. If Mike Thomas does, in fact, play, I can't really take him that seriously, even though he's one of the best. It's just hard. I think he'll be a decoy. I think that's really what they would use Mike Thomas for if Mike Thomas does, in fact, play. Where the Packers could thrive is the secondary, though. Drew Brees has been known to throw a few interceptions in his day. We saw a bad interception late in the first half against the Raiders. And you look at the guys that they have with Tre'Quan Smith, Taysom Hill, couple of the other, I mean, they have a bunch of unknowns. Like, I don't have their depth chart out in front of me. I'm going to pull it up now. That's bad journalism on my behalf. I don't even know. I'm not a journalist. I should call myself a journalist. But that's a bad look on my behalf. I apologize, Tappers. But seriously, okay, pulling up it now. Emmanuel Sanders, forgot about him. Deontay Harris, Marquez Callaway. I mean, they have guys, but they really don't, right? Like, Emmanuel Sanders was a ghost. He had a couple big catches late, but they were meaningless catches in all reality. So they have guys, but it's not really something where you fear them. And that's where I think the Packers could really succeed, is shutting down those guys and creating coverage sack opportunities. It does seem like the Packers, though, defensively, have kind of found their motivation with Breeze's comments around the flag and George Floyd. Remember, back in June, Za'Darius Smith had tweeted out the Packers-Saints matchup during that time to say week 3, when Breeze was getting all that shit, basically getting canceled by the NFL. And then Za'Darius followed up with a t-shirt. You know, he's been known to showcase words on his t-shirt, a Photoshop of him pulling down his t-shirt and saying George Floyd on it. So Za'Darius Smith is obviously motivated. Za'Darius Smith is a captain. When he's motivated, I think the rest of the defense is motivated. I think they are going to weirdly use this as motivation. And maybe it's not weird. It's where you see comments that are not made about your team be the driving force of you playing at a different level. And Green Bay's defense, if you had to be critical of them through the first 2 weeks, it's been they've really lacked that pop and motivation in the first half. Jen Hale, who is the Fox sideline reporter for the last 2 Packer games, she mentioned on Sunday how the Packers, you know, Mike Patton and some of the defenders were like, we got to find our motivation early. We have to sort of fuel our own fire. I thought the Seahawks offense kind of hyping up their guys late in that game on the sideline was great. And I kind of want to see that a little bit more from the Packer offense, especially early on. Like, get these guys fired up, get these guys ready to play, and we're going to be good. And Rashawn Gary is another name that's worth mentioning on this defense. I think I mentioned Rashawn Gary on Monday. If I didn't, he's worth mentioning here. Rashawn Gary's been a monster early on in this. And Ryan Ramczyk, very good left, right tackle. Taron Armstead, very good left tackle. This is a very good offensive line. This offensive line is similar to the Packers. I would say they are right there with Green Bay in terms of best offensive lines in football. And so it's going to be a fight between Gary and those guys. Gary will be really tested here. This is not going to be easy for Rashawn Gary, nor will it be easy for Za'Darius Smith or Preston Smith. And by the way, Preston Smith, kind of been a ghost through these first 2 weeks. Za'Darius Smith a little bit too. I mean, Za'Darius Smith, I guess, got to Matt Stafford, so I won't say Za'Darius has been a ghost, but I feel like we've seen nothing from Preston Smith early on. We haven't talked about Alvin Kamara, who's obviously the premier X factor for the New Orleans Saints. Kamara could very well go crazy. This, to me, is the first real test for the Packers with a shifty running back. We saw Raheem Mostert do what he did in the NFC Championship game, and I think this will be a declaration of, did the Packers learn their lesson or not? If the Packers learn their lesson, Kamara gets shut down. I mean, if Kamara beats you in different ways, I mean, look, Kamara is a really good running back. Kamara's going to have moments. But if you don't let him go crazy, where Get Up on Monday is talking about Alvin Kamara had 250 all-purpose yards, then good. Then you've done you're at least improving from the NFC Championship game. I have no idea who's going to guard Alvin Kamara in terms of a pass game. Like, I don't know if that's Darnell Savage, who's been not very impressive early on this season. Both safeties, Amos has kind of struggled out the gates as well. Or if it's going to be a guy like Christian Kirksey. I do not think you want Preston Smith on him. Preston Smith has been covering guys in the flat. I think that is a bad fucking idea with Alvin Kamara. And I know the Saints. I know Sean Payton is a machine. He's going to see that on tape. He's going to see the fact that on leak plays, they've been using Preston Smith more. I think the Packers are going to have to use more zone. And you're going to have to use short zones where a guy like Jair Alexander or Kevin King or Chandon Sullivan or even a Raven Green. I think this is a more of a Raven Green game than we've seen. We saw more Chris Barnes, right? And we saw Chris Barnes and them sticking to kind of that base set. I think you're going to have to bring in Raven Green and bring in a little more on that secondary so you have more guys to cover Kamara, the Taysom Hills of the world, because Taysom Hill easily could be a similar factor. If you have to tell Darnell Savage, like, you got to either take Kamara or Hill on most plays, they're usually both in the passing game. So it's a tough choice. And I think Kamara is obviously your answer. But we'll see what Mike Patton brings to the table. I think this is a big game for him. And you can't just expect things to, like, slow down. Like, I haven't looked, but I'm sure the over-under is somewhere in the 50s. So, people are expecting points out of this game. It's not like we're ignorant that there aren't going to be points scored in a dome that is similar to Coors Field at some points with the amount of scoring that happens. But also, you have to at least show some signs that you are progressing as a defensive coordinator. And if you're not, then we have some questions. Because it's not going to get any easier next week with Atlanta. Now, granted, it's not in the dome and you're back at Lambeau Field. But Atlanta's offense is very good, too. So it's not going to get any easier the following week. All right, let's wrap up the show with a little bit of COVID. Like I said at the open, if you don't want to do anything COVID-related, I understand. Feel free to turn it off. It is sports-related, at least at the jump. And then it goes more into the Milwaukee side of things after that. So we've seen now multiple coaches and multiple teams get fined for not wearing their masks and not following mask protocol. We have not seen this in college football. In fact, college football has not fined anyone. They have not suspended anyone for not wearing a mask. We do have a college coach, though, who has COVID-19 and Mike Norvell of Florida State, which means that he will not be on the sidelines against Miami on Saturday. And it's interesting that this is becoming a thing. Now, I have not heard coaches say, like, hey, yeah, we have to do a better job. I have to figure out what is comfortable for me. It does seem like some coaches are just, shall we say, not necessarily masking up and doing it. You know, Bill Belichick, to me, felt like he was kind of breaking the system. Matt LaFleur has kind of been wearing a gator the entire time. He hasn't really shown the mask off in any situation. And I do wonder what they can do. Like, I do wonder what the coaches can do. I mean, is it simple as wear a mask? Or are there some that are saying, like, hey, look, it's really affecting my coaching if I have this on. I have trouble breathing. I have trouble thinking. And I would like a medical exemption for it. And is that a possibility? I just think about, like, a guy like Vic Fangio or John Gruden, who's a little older. Vic Fangio much older than Gruden. But that, to me, is there. And I'm not surprised that Gruden and Sean Payton... Pete Carroll is another one. I should have mentioned Pete Carroll before I mentioned the Peyton and Gruden. Pete Carroll is another older coach who is like, all right, so what can kind of be the solve here? Is it you just wear sort of that gator and you talk to your coaching buddies and are like, what are you doing from a mask perspective? How are you handling this? Also, too, is the NFL being a little bit overly cautious? Will the NFL at some point say, all right, guys, like, you don't need to be rocking masks. Like, look at basketball, baseball. I mean, baseball, there are masks. Like, Craig Council wears his, but it also is down a lot. But baseball doesn't fine any coach for not wearing their mask. I think they would if they came out and they weren't wearing a mask, but they haven't fined anyone for not really masking up. Basketball, the only coach we really saw, well, I think two. I think Alvin Gentry wore a mask, and so did Mike D'Antoni, but those are both high-risk coaches. So they were, I think, advised to wear a mask from the NBA. We again mentioned, like, college football, we haven't seen it. Why is the NFL the only one? Is the NFL just not wanting to look bad? They don't want to be that. They don't want that to be the headline. My buddy Zach said they're worried about the inevitable outbreak in the NFL. I think that's a little bit extreme. I don't know if that is going to happen, but we'll see. We'll see what comes of this. I'm really interested to see where we're at because I don't know how many NFL fans care that their coaches are wearing a mask or not wearing a mask. I don't know if it really matters to the fan base. I do think for some it sends a good message, but I feel like at this point it's been driven into the fucking ground that you have to wear a mask. I don't think anyone is saying you don't have to wear a mask, but the mask mandate has continued in Milwaukee, and that is an amazing transition by your boy. And not just in Milwaukee, but also in the state of Wisconsin. And it's interesting, right? It's 60 days. Tony Evers, I feel like, had to do something because of all the stuff going on in colleges. What I haven't seen, though, is the split between college and non-college COVID cases. That, to me, is the secret sauce. That, to me, is the recipe of How many of these cases right now in the last 7 days, if you do that as a rolling average, how many are 18 to 24 compared to the rest of the state of Wisconsin? And if it is all, if it's like, say it's 80 to 90%, well, why aren't we, and this has kind of been a problem for the entire mandate, entire rulings of like, why don't we just limit it to 18 to 25 year olds? And I know that the feeling is, well, we don't want to, or if you're on a college campus, it's absolutely mandatory. Why doesn't the UW system say, despite new rulings, like we're going to wear a mask? And I put out some questions around mask wearing for college football because of the Notre Dame cancellation. And I got some really good feedback, kind of a juxtaposition. My buddy Dan was like, when I go by Marquette during the day, I see everybody wearing masks and everything like that. And then Chuck, who's a follower, also said to me, like, no, at night, no one's wearing a mask around Marquette. And, like, if I stop in to get something to eat, like, no one's really masked up and everything like that. So it's almost like the virtue signal during the day, you don't want to be judged, but at night, you can go without a mask. And Tony Evers has said, like, the bars are a problem and that the bars are a real issue in fighting COVID. And, A, that's tough on bar owners, right? I feel for the bar owners who feel like they're getting blamed for this. And the bar owners are kind of like, what the fuck, dude? Like, such a ricochet shot against the bar owners who are doing their best. I've only targeted one bar where I felt unsafe. And I won't mention that bar's name because I'm not going to shame them. They're making their own decisions. I'll tell you, I will not be back during the time of COVID. But most bars are doing their best. Most bars are requiring masks in the door. Most bars are requiring that you wear masks when you order them, at least here in Milwaukee. Maybe it's different up north in Menasha or something like that, or in Mozanie, right at your local corner bar. But when it comes to the big cities where a lot of the cases are happening, masks are being used at bars. And they're outdoors too. And they provide outdoor seating and they provide outdoor space. And Nomad is one of the bars that is making an effort to kind of have a heated experience come wintertime so the outdoor bar continues. And that, I think, is going to be the case for a lot of bars here in Wisconsin. So kind of the shrapnel from Evers about these young kids not going to bars, I think, is ridiculous. Like, I think that you can have a safe environment and be at a bar as long as you're making sure that you're masked up when you're not drinking a beer. And that's okay. And if you're keeping 6 feet, that's the other part of it. Like, if you're keeping 6 feet and you're making sure tables are getting cleaned off and everything like that, there is nothing to worry about. In a lot of ways, this is a scare tactic, and it's kind of unfair to the bar owner. So I do feel for them in this sort of weird world. And I'm also curious on why 60 days versus 30. Why not just do a rolling 30? I think that you would have had less opposition from your political opponents, even if he'd said 15. If he said, I want to see how the two-week averages roll out with the colleges. I understand that I am violating, you know, he probably won't say that out front, but he's like, I know that I'm bending the rules a little bit, and I hope that my opponents will understand that we need to get this college stuff figured out, and once we do, then we can have a discussion. But now it's going to get challenged, and now we're going to do the same fucking thing over again, and people are going to laugh at Wisconsin and make us look stupid, but in reality, it's a violation of our state's constitution. And we're not working together, but that's literally everybody in 2020 in politics. No one works together. It's all divisive. It's all this crap. So I'm sorry that we diverted from sports at the very end here, but I did want to talk about it because I think a lot of us live in Milwaukee, a lot of us live in Wisconsin, a lot of us are dealing with the mask mandate in our own way, or we're dealing with COVID in our own way. And that's just my opinion from someone who has made it out to the bar a couple times, and I've felt relatively safe. And if I didn't, I would stop going. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. All right, that does it. Either tomorrow we will have Tapping the Keg, or Should I Bet That, as a Daily Tap segment. They'll all be dependent on if Mitchie and I are rolling out a podcast. All right. Take care, Tappers. Have yourself a great Wednesday. We'll talk tomorrow. Bye.